Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd bet it always said a morning like this, you could tell the difference in between waking up and coming to, and I've always thought that described it pretty accurately. My name's David Blakemore. I'm from Campbell, Missouri. It's my pleasure to welcome you to this 33rd annual Beltwide. Our association is tickled to death to sponsor this, and all these educational programs, as it were. We're going to be, at the same time, having the Cotton Engineering Conference is going on at the same time. And I'd like to thank our co-chairman, Harrison Ashley, and Tommy Valco for developing this program. It's not really set in on Harrison yet that he's going to have to do this by himself next year. He'd be not near as calm as what he is. The format of these presentations will be similar to yesterday. And we're scheduled to conclude by noon. This morning, we're going to start off with Australian round module handling, and it's going to be presented by Chris Denholm.
Thank you, David. So, most of you all know I'm in New Orleans with USDARS. And I spent what my boss keeps referring to as a three-month vacation. I don't know I would call it a vacation spot. Australia's a beautiful country. I just didn't see that part of Australia. So I was down there visiting some of the cotton gins with Renee Vandersloos, who's following me in this presentation. And Vicki Martin from Cotton Incorporated was involved in this as well, providing the support. Quick overview, I'm sure, with Renee, I think this is his fifth year straight attending Beltwide.
Seven.
I don't wonder why they talk about you never being at work there. You know, you've probably heard, but, you know, it's a good analog for the U.S. industry, but there are some differences. You know, it averages 3 to 4 million bales. It's looking to have a 5 million bale crop next year. They're all excited about that. Their goal is 6 million and 7 million. They are giving me a lot of grief about our quality, and I said, yeah, but 4 million bales, I can find that, you know, beat your quality anywhere. They are a lot different than us. I would say they're 100% export. Renee asked me to say 98% because they do have one mill left in the country. All their cotton pretty much goes straight to Asia. Very little warehousing. It's amazingly fast from gin to out of the country, unlike us. It's fairly high yielding cotton. Their average for the last couple of years has been a little over 4 bales per acre. You hear their crazy numbers because they're doing metric hectare. They have 41 gins, 5 class and offices. Then they are averaging 60 to 80 bales an hour. I'm saying 95% round. They're probably closer to 97, 98% round, and conventionals are going away rapidly. It's a much smaller cotton production area. You can see here, see if the pointer works. Yeah. Everything from up in the north by Emerald down to, this is kind of the core of their cotton. Traditionally, Narrabri and Moree, and it's been moving further south, and now down here around Griffith and Hay is where it's really been expanding. That's where the newest gins are. So you can see it's not exactly the tourist hotspots, which is typical of cotton. So where I was at, they told me I was going to be outside of Melbourne in Geelong on the beach, which sounds all nice. It was winter. I did miss New Orleans summer, so I can't complain. But then I kept going all the way nice and inland. And there was 2 flights a day from Sydney to this lovely little airport in Moree. The nice thing is they don't actually have airport security. And after your first flight, they know you by name. While I was there, I was able to visit 10 gins out of the 41. Well, actually 11 gins, but one was strictly running moats. 3 of the class and offices out of 5. We were supposed to make a 4th one, but weather had other alternatives. And one of their warehouse facilities in Melbourne. So their gins are much larger than ours on average. Their fields are much larger, and they are completely remote. So pretty much hauling, it's all either flatbeds or specialty trailers. You do see these crazy road trains that are hauling, I think that's about 17 modules on 3 trailers at once. They have the specialized cotton cartage module trailers that actually hold, I think, 18 on 2 trailers. But they strictly use this when they're doing longer distance hauling. But it's nice, it clamps it down right away. But it's a one-trick pony, unlike the flatbeds. The doubles, the B-train doubles, are probably the most typical way you see. the modules coming in. Like I said, the gens, they say that's a typical module yard for them. And they'll flip that module yard two or three times during the season. For some of their gens, the season hasn't ended sometimes. They've actually genned year-round, which that's what led to building more gens. And then this gen up top, that's Oscott's newest gen, and it's a real nice big facility. Of course, I asked Renee, I'm like, what are the tanks? They have to bring in their own water, since they don't have any water they can hook up to. At the gens, hauling them around, you know, actually handling the modules is a little different than here in the U.S. The moon buggy, invented by Boswell out in California, but you don't really see them anywhere in the U.S. They love them in Australia, and I have to say, after seeing them, they are great. While they do use forklifts and grapples, and they have at least one gen has one of every technique I've ever seen to handle around. Every gen's using moon buggies to move them around and bring them to the feeder, which can hold six modules at a time, which is quite nice. As you can see, you can put them in whichever configuration you want. What Renee refers to as sausage style down here on the bottom, which if you're depending on which unwrapping system you're going to use, you may want them that way, or the what Renee refers to as the wagon wheel here. The moon buggy holds six either which way. So I was asked to look at how they're using RFID, and 80% of the gens have RFID at the weighbridge. They're pretty much doing paperless at the weighbridge. There were some concerns with bringing in the double stacked, 18 at a time, that they couldn't read them all. The antenna manufacturers told the genners, we don't guarantee it'll work. They haven't had any problems. Pretty much every gen has RFID at the feeder. Most of the gens, though, are still using paper, hard copy, everything. Everyone says they want RFID, but then you have the same arguments there you have here, which is, who's going to pay for it? It seems like it's going to benefit the grower more than the ginner, but there is interest in it. So then, like I said, primarily, my background is fiber quality and textiles, and so obviously contamination is a concern, and one of the things is, well, how do you unwrap these guys? And there's four basic methods Australia uses, the spider, which most of us are familiar with, the stover. Then the two most popular is the claw, which I'll talk about, which is kind of their version of the Cherokee. It's inspired by the Cherokee Roundup. And then manual or absolutely nothing, just doing it by hand. So spider, I think everyone here is fairly familiar with it. It's fairly common. Takes about 90 seconds. Rotates the module around to know where to cut in the proper position. And so after about 90 seconds, though, just to position and cut the wrap, you still have another 30, 45 seconds to remove the wrap. And a lot of the gens were complaining about this time lag because when you're running 80 bales an hour, you've got to get these modules into the feeder as fast as you can. Real quick, you can see here, it was real muddy while I was down there. And all I ever heard was, Australia doesn't get rain. It rained pretty much nonstop while I was there. One problem the spider was having is these rollers down here were covered in mud. And as they got covered in mud, their pointer doesn't want to really work. But as the rollers got covered in mud, it was really having a hard time rolling the modules to the right cutting position. And they also had problems with the undersized modules, the little baby ones. When the cutter would come in, it would just bounce up and down. And that was annoying the gens when they were hitting it seven and eight times, and they're poking lots of holes in the plastic. That's not necessarily a good thing from a contamination standpoint or efficiency. Stover, two of the 40 gens have it. It can rotate the module, as you know, to put it in the cut zone. However, the two gens that have it are not rotating the module at all. They're just cutting wherever, which is not a great idea. You can see there in the lower right, hanging off the railing, that is one of those tails from the module being cut in the wrong place. And so the operators now has to make sure they get both the main piece of wrap and that tail. Doesn't go into the feeder. Still about 60 seconds to position and cut it, another 30 to 40 seconds to remove the wrap and unload the module, get the next guy moving in. As they're trying to do, like we are, push heavier and heavier modules, one of the problems they were having is, since they're not using module trucks, they're not confined by trying to get it in that module truck, they were having problems actually getting it into the stover and then actually, when they're wet, rotating and handling that oversized wet module. There were lots of field repairs and reinforcements on these guys. But the unique one there is what they call the Claw of the Crab, which Namoi is one of the two big co-ops in Australia. And they said, oh yeah, this is inspired by the Roundup. And basically the big difference is, rather than come in horizontal and pick that sucker up and rotate it around, they feed into the unwrapping system already up on end. And that claw comes down and it's got spikes in it. It grabs the plastic and it doesn't cut the wrap just like the Roundup. It's a little faster overall, still about 80 seconds or so per. Again, with high moisture there, I had a problem. The cotton didn't want to slide out. And so then they're sitting there bouncing it up and down, and that's just eating up time. Undersized modules, you have to go in there, and now you're on the roller bed cutting manually. That's not exactly safe. Any severely damaged wrap, you got to go in and do it manually. And so for a country that has serious concerns on safety, that one, when it works, but when it's not safe, it's not safe. The other most common method is manual. Like I said, it's using the moon buggy. You can see here, it comes in with the operator with a bar down. Operator cuts it manually, attaches either via a spike or a clamp to the crossbar, which then the driver raises and starts running the chain bed to dump it out. Now again, you're going to cut it wherever you're cutting it, so you are going to cut in the no-cut zone a lot. You're going to have a tail. But the thing is going to be that if a good driver and a good ground operator, he's going to see that tail and grab it. Now, there is an e-stop here and also here, and that was installed because when the operator's over here, the driver can't see him. And think about once a year someone gets killed by a moon bug in Australia because it's pretty damn dangerous. It is fast, about 30 seconds start to finish, and so that is the most common method, and it's probably the preferred method. And so the other thing I was asked to look at is cotton classification. Renee comes, every year he says how great Australia cotton is, how clean it is. So we want to see how they're classing their system. And it's based on the USDA, but it's a little different. One thing is all their gins have these nice enclosed rooms for the bagging and sampling. So it's a little more user-friendly environment than our gins. They do collect the samples from both sides of bales like we do, but they put them in these plastic rolls rather than just in sacks. And then when they get 25 bales in a roll, they roll it up nice and snug and off the class and office it goes. Like I said, it's two-sided sampling, same as USDA. One big difference on HBI, it's only every third bale. Now, if they go below base grade, which for Australia is 31.3, 36, then they can start classing every other bale. They strictly do human class for leaf and color, and that they do every bale. They use USDA standards and grade boxes. The class and offices are not government. They're not really independent. They're paid by the merchant. There's, I think, three different companies doing classing. There's some reasons they're very uniform. Their human classers are very, 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 very quick. Almost a little too quick, in my opinion, when they're doing the color. That being said, Australia does have very clean cotton, and it is fairly white. So it is a little different than ours. The offices look pretty much like a USDA office, just a lot smaller, 2-3 HVI lines in there. One of the things was contamination. Can't have talk without it. So Renee and I were in the classing office and went to a couple of them, and he said it, not me, do you ever see contamination in the classing samples? And without hesitating, all of them went, oh, hell yeah, and they pull out a bag. And Tommy asked me if I spike these samples or we spike these, and this is actually how those classing samples were put out on the table by the office, with those pieces of yellow promptly visible. And down here on the bottom, that one, those samples had come in while we were there. So I just happened to see the piece of yellow there in the middle and snapped a quick picture. So that kind of got my attention because I never really hear about us having classing samples with plastic in it. So I looked on the reports, and I think there was one EM call for plastic in last year. And so I asked Jimmy Knowlton how often he sees plastic, and the answer was never. So why is Australia seeing it? We're not. That's a good question. I think part of it's some of the high speed, but we really don't have an answer on that. I do want to thank Cotton Incorporated, the Cotton Leads, who financed this, Cyro for hosting, the Australian Cotton Ginners, the Warehousemen's Merchants. They were real friendly and let us all in. Like I said, it wasn't really a vacation. The first two plus months, I was there by myself, and my wife and kids came over for the last 3 weeks. I'm still paying for making her fly across the ocean by herself with two kids. I'm a jerk. The five-year-old wanted to see a kangaroo with a joey in the pouch, and oddly enough, we found a kangaroo with a joey in the pouch. And so with that, thank you.
Chris, I was a little bit surprised you said only 85% is round microns. I guess I was assuming.
No, 85% have RFID at the weighbridge. 95 to 97% is round module. Yeah, round's going away, and our conventional's going away in a heartbeat.